Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world? So welcome to the 529th edition of SDG, Crisis Update number 42. And then later in this message, folks, we're going to tie it all into exercising what's known as kingdom authority. Now, the Bible says in Romans chapter 13, let every soul be subject to the higher powers. So I hope you stay tuned to understand what this scripture actually means and what it doesn't mean, and the truth that we'll never be over the things that God's put under us until we're willing to get under and stay under those things that God's put over us. So, folks, the bottom line, as it is all the time, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. And as God's people, we're just passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity. And stay tuned to find out the latest news that the lying mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, how did it start? If you're a listener for any time now, you would know it all started with this lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as always, folks, we're going to start with something from a past episode. And before we get into these news updates, I'd just like to review what we talked about last week in the Back to the Future segment. Remember, we talked about the jabs literally turning its victims into mutants and zombies if the fast-growing cancers doesn't kill them first. Now, folks, if you did take the jab and you're a little concerned, there is some detox you can do. And furthermore, some of you just got a placebo because, do you know, this is the phase 3 study right now on we the people. Literally hundreds of millions of people are in a phase 3 vaccine trial right now. But what I'd like to do is remind you of an executive from Moderna, which we played this clip probably, what was it, nearly half a year ago. This is a Moderna executive in a TED Talk back in 2017 talking about these mRNA jabs and how they can rewrite the genetic code in the human DNA. It's a short clip, less than 2 minutes. Just have a listen to what this Moderna executive has to say about this mRNA technology.
So I started my professional life about 30 years ago as a nurse in the pediatric intensive care unit. And I remember this one infant, let's call him Jonathan, who came in really, really ill. Seemed to have a rare genetic defect, but in those days, gene diagnosis was still in its infancy, so we couldn't really figure out what's wrong with him. And in the years since, as I've trained as a physician scientist, we've been living this phenomenal digital and scientific revolution. And I'm here today to tell you that we're actually hacking the software of life and that it's changing the way we think about prevention and treatment of disease. So here's all the biology you need to know in 30 seconds. Our body is made out of organs, our organs are made out of cells, and in every cell, there's this thing called messenger RNA, or mRNA for short, that transmits the critical information from the DNA, our genes, to the protein, which is really the stuff we're all made out of. This is the critical information that determines what a cell will actually do. And so we think of it like an operating system. And it's not just in every cell of our body, it's actually in every cell of every organism alive. It's the same thing. And so if you could actually change that, which we call the software of life, if you could introduce a line of code or change a line of code, it turns out that has profound implications for everything from the flu to cancer. And I'm going to demonstrate that with three short examples.
There he says it. We're going to program the DNA of the human body. And it does have profound implications, folks. But it's not working out the way they claim it is. And they've known this since 2012 when they failed in the animal studies in phase three with the enhanced autoimmune deficiency, where basically when exposed to the pathogen that the jab was trying to protect, all of the ferrets in the study started to die. But like I said, folks, rest at ease, because a lot of people got placebos and a lot of people have very strong systems, which there are some protocols out there right now that cleanse your system. So it's not a death sentence like a lot of people are saying. I truly don't believe that for those two reasons. But let's keep moving. Then a little later, maybe a week, a month later, we did Microsoft clip also admitting as much with regard to programming behavior by DNA manipulation. This is a long clip, 3.5 minutes, but what I'd like you to do is just listen to this very closely, because I'm setting up what we're going to talk about in this week's Back to the Future. So here's the DNA promo on hacking the human DNA.
Imagine a world where we can do computation inside living cells.
The problem that we're trying to solve is really trying to have a more sophisticated diagnosis that can happen automatically inside cells.
Imagine a biological computer that operates inside a living cell. So for example, it could be used to determine whether a cell is cancerous, and if so, then trigger the death of the cell.
So here we're talking about little molecular systems that you can, you know, work that run in a test tube or maybe even in a live cell, so they're really small. The type of work that they're doing is essentially they're trying to sense, analyze, and control molecular information.
In this project, we're trying to use DNA as a programmable material.
DNA is highly programmable, just like a computer, and we can program a whole range of complex behaviors using DNA molecules.
So we're taking advantage of a phenomenon called DNA strand displacement.
So DNA strand displacement is essentially a competitive hybridization reaction. So it's two strands of DNA that come together, and as they bind to one another, a third strand that was initially bound is kicked off. One issue with like any biology research or biomolecular research is that it's always sort of a cycle of trial and error. You test it, it doesn't work, so you go back to the drawing board and you do that over and over again. And it's a slow cycle because doing experiments just is hard and it takes a lot of time.
We developed a language for programming molecular circuits made of DNA. So the programmer would write down a collection of DNA strands, and the software will work out how these DNA strands interact with each other and can be used to predict their behavior over time. And this kind of software could, for example, be used to detect and fix bugs in a molecular circuit design before that circuit is built. For decades, biologists have been using chemical reaction networks as a means of describing the behavior of biological systems. So what our technology enables for the first time is that any system described as a chemical reaction network can now be translated, implemented in biology at the molecular level.
One of the things that we've done recently, which I'm particularly excited about, is that we have designed using our tool and created experimentally is an implementation of the so-called approximate majority algorithm. At the moment, really, the technology is very much in its infancy. It's still very much at the research stage. So most of what we're doing is in the test tube. An enormous goal will be to have what we're able to do in the test tube also working inside cells. That's a hugely enormous challenge.
So this could enable a whole range of biotechnology applications. For example, it could allow us to both detect and treat disease to a level of precision that has not been possible so far. It could also allow us to make new compounds far more efficiently. These compounds could be medicines or biomaterials, and ultimately it could allow us to make biological computers that operate at the molecular scale.
Chilling information, isn't it, folks? I'm telling you, this is their metaverse. And the scheme they plan on creating, in which we'll be living in this altered reality, which is, in fact, no reality at all. Like the one depicted in the Netflix series, The Black Mirror, that I shared with you last week. So, folks, this is all coming together. The information we've seen in all of these sci-fi shows and movies and what have you, it's lesser magic. It's their white magic, you know, it's the disclosure before the event, their sense of self-righteousness. But now, let's change gears a little bit, but stay on topic. And I'd like you to listen to this clip from a man named Ray Kurzweil, who says that nanobots will connect your neocortex to the cloud. He's on Neil deGrasse Tyson's show, and this is Ray Kurzweil. We're going to learn a little bit more about Ray in the Back to the Future episode, but this 3-minute and 43-second clip is a lot about how they're going to actually, Zuckerberg said, the metaverse will be capable of doing in about a decade. So let's listen to Mr. Ray Kurzweil.
We will connect wirelessly our neocortex to the cloud.
This is with nanobots that that enter your neocortex.
Right.
This is your prediction. For when? When is that? Just so I know.
Well, June 2033.
Yeah. June 12th, 8:35 in the morning.
So we have 300 million modules in our neocortex, each of which can recognize a pattern. They're organized in this hierarchy. We create that hierarchy with our own thinking, but it's 300 million. So is that a big number or a little? Well, it was big enough for us to invent language and physics, but it's also limited when you realize how long it takes to read a book or learn a language. We will be able to expand that, and that expansion will not be a one-shot deal. It'll be connected to the cloud. The cloud is pure information technology. One of my themes is that information technology grows exponentially. It roughly doubles in power every year. That's what the cloud is doing. The cloud is twice as powerful every year. And when we can connect and expand our neocortex in the cloud, it will expand without limit. And so we'll be funnier, and we'll be sexier, and it'll be harder for you to win this prize again.
So just to clarify what I think you just said, that in 20 years, plus or minus, so the mid-2030s, we will have nanobots that we can feed into our brain that directly connect to the cloud rather than through anything we carry in our pocket. And in that way, wirelessly, we can basically download entire books, entire languages, and we will then know these things just by the act of downloading them.
Well, that's one implication.
Into our brains.
But we'll have more neocortex, so we won't be limited to a mere 300 million pattern modules. We'll have billions or 10 billion.
Wait, biologically or just simply because we have these nanobots?
We'll have this extension that's non-biological.
Non-biological, right. So.
I mean, this would be pretty useless if it didn't have an extension. I mean, when you access all of Google.
Yes, it would just be a gaming device otherwise,
so,
right.
You can access all of knowledge and...
I got that. So isn't this like the scene in The Matrix where they sit in a chair and they upload... one of my favorite lines of the film is Keanu Reeves. You know, they teach him martial arts, and he says, "I know kung fu." And you mean I'm gonna know? You know, or jujitsu, whatever. So in 20 seconds, he's now an expert. Are you telling me that's what's gonna happen?
The non-biological portion of our thinking will be able to download skills, right?
Wow.
And it does that now. I mean, you load some software in your computer. It didn't. For example, speech recognition, which I worked on, we had to spend months teaching a computer how to understand human speech. But now you want to do that on your notebook computer, you just download the software. It can download skills that another computer learned. So that's a feature of non-biological intelligence.
Wow. Folks, did you hear that? Did you hear what Neil deGrasse Tyson said? And I thought the same thing the first time I listened to this. Wow, this is just like that training seat in The Matrix where they could learn anything from martial arts to flying a helicopter. I had the exact same thought. That's where this is headed. Now, where it breaks down with regard to how The Matrix works is it's non-biological function. So it's limited to the network in your thoughts at this point and what you can recall with regard to memory and information. It doesn't apply to your muscle memory. And that's what martial arts are. That's a lot of what flying a helicopter or any other skill from welding to ballet. That's muscle memory. And that is not what he's talking about right here. Now, we're going to do a little more on Ray Kurzweil in the Back to the Future segment. So stay tuned. I think it'll knock your socks off. Now, this week, we're going to wrap up episodes on the classic Wake Up America from the audio program by Stephen Jacobson. Over the last 9 weeks, we've been playing 5-minute clips out of this incredibly powerful audio that I actually will share with you in the Ken's Corner segment as to one of my red pill moments where I woke up. But this is Stephen Jacobson, Wake Up America, Part 10, and the final episode in the classic audio, which woke me up, which was basically my red pill moment. But here we go with this 5-minute and 18-second clip.
Usury used to be defined as any interest charged for a loan. The modern definition redefines it as excessive interest. Any interest charged for a pretended loan is excessive. Interest, then, should be recognized for what it really is. Tribute. A sum of money paid as acknowledgement of submission or as the price for protection. Tribute is extortion by a conqueror over the conquered. The so-called deficit is not really a deficit at all, but an asset the government gets in exchange for its role in the credit-creating scheme of the banking system. As the deficit grows, both government and bank assets grow, because the government and the banks acquire things of value with the credit they create out of debt. Banks should not be allowed to lend what they do not have, which is exactly what banks do. Banks enter credits and debits of nothing. They do not transfer honest dollars of gold and silver coin. What makes a check bad is the same thing that makes fractional reserve banking bad: insufficient funds, or rather no funds, as is the case. The words pay, borrow, and loan are meaningless without the means of payment. No one is paying for anything. Debts are being discharged with debt instruments, but no debts are being settled by payment in honest money, lawful money, constitutional money. There can be no liberty, no justice, no economic freedom without an honest money system. 3 years after signing the Federal Reserve Act into law, President Woodrow Wilson made the following statement.
Our system of credit is concentrated. The growth of the nation, therefore, and all our activities are in the hands of a few men. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of small groups of dominant men.
When using wealth as a medium of exchange, Government must receive wealth from its citizens to pay for goods and services. When using credit, government is totally independent of taxes and does not have to pay for anything, which the illusion of taxes conceals from public view. When the only thing on deposit in banks are bookkeeping entries, the honest payment of taxes is no longer possible because there is no honest money with which to pay. The notion of deficit spending leads the public to believe that the government spends more than it collects in taxes, when in fact Congress spends nothing and wastes nothing because no money goes to Washington as taxes. Taxes sustain the illusion that the numbers people call dollars have value, when gold and silver coin are the only honest money measured in dollars. Though nothing is financed by taxes, consumption, the public's capacity to use up goods and services, is reduced. Subtracting credits from bank accounts reduces consumption and eliminates previously created inflation. Consumption is regulated by taxing money, credit, away from people so they cannot spend it. Phony taxes regulate inflation. It is a safety valve to keep us from being drowned in paper and to keep prices from exploding to phenomenal numbers. A check to the Internal Revenue Service authorizes the transfer of numbers from one bank account to another. When bank deposits are only bookkeeping entries, taxes are an illusion that seem real when banks subtract numbers because there is less to spend. The tax system reduces public allotment of credit in order to destroy some of the bank-created credit so that the bankers and their government can continue to create more credit and with this credit get unlimited goods and services for nothing. This is the great secret and deception of modern money and taxes, the greatest magic show on earth.
There you have it, folks. No liberty, freedom, or justice without an honest and fair money system. For the love of money is the root of all evil. Not all sorts, not some. For the love of money is the root of all evil. And money isn't evil, folks. The love of it is. So you may be wondering, well, how's this all connect? Why one minute are you talking about nanotech and the neocortex, and the next minute you're talking about an unjust money system? Well, folks, it all relates. And that's how they're going to create this world where, like Klaus Schwab, the leader of the World Economic Forum, said, and I have to call that clip up and play it for you. By 2030, people will own nothing and love it. But folks, we have to keep moving. Right now, it's time for Mr. Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, folks, let's get started with the coronavirus heist.
It's a scandemic. They call it the great equalizer. And say we're all in this together. Except that for the bankers, politicians, and powers to be. And folks, that ain't either you or me. So let's all wake up to the coronavirus heist and just say they know all their lies and mind control. The coronavirus.
That's right, folks. It all started with this lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. Hey, I have a clip here now, folks. It's from a funeral director. I believe he's from England. He's being interviewed here, and he's talking about the deaths, the type, and the quantity that he's seeing in 2021. Now, it's a rather long clip. It's 8 minutes and 41 seconds, but I think it has a lot of information in it. He's a very well-spoken man, and I think he shares a lot of information, and you need to hear what this man, who's right there in the middle of it all, has to say about his observations concerning deaths in 2021.
My name's Wesley. I've been a funeral director for over 3 years, so I have a bit of knowledge about what was going on before this pandemic started and what's going on right now. So there was a spike back in March, April last year, and after that it considerably calmed down. It was all hyped from what I was seeing, and they shut down these extra storage units that they had in the summer, and they never opened them up again.
Could they use them in the first place?
Yes, but I don't think that. I couldn't tell you how many bodies were in there, but they soon went back down. They were only up for a couple of months.
So the only time you saw a spike was right at the start of this whole thing, and since there's been next to nothing?
Well, come autumn, it was probably one of the quietest on record, and other funeral directors will tell you that, where they can speak out. But come January, the numbers were going through the roof. But this time, the extra storage units were hidden. They were out of the way. And that's since people were being vaccinated. So this year, as the vaccinations have gone on, I've seen trends through the age groups. Obviously it's not marked down that they're vaccinated, but to have the most funerals that you've ever got, that you've ever done in 2 weeks, and they're all aged 30, 40, no older.
And that's what you're seeing now?
That's what I saw earlier in the year when that age group got vaccinated.
And what sort of proportion was that compared to the proportions that you usually deal with?
Well, you usually deal with all different age groups, but as I was saying, that the elderly that were probably going to go in the next year or year and a half or whatever, they've already gone. So there's a big gap there. So we weren't having those deaths anymore. And with younger people, they're now vaccinated, and I had about 12 in one go.
And how many would you usually get in?
Oh, very few, very few. Well, I mean, we've had high suicide rates, especially in young men. Then that was mainly last summer into the autumn.
But could you give people a sense of proportion? You got 12 in a short space of time. How many would you get in that space of time? One, or maybe like a 50% chance?
We normally have about 4 or 5 funerals going, not 12, 11, 12, and not all of that age group. There would be old people in there.
Okay.
So, and then now, what? It's quiet, and what I've seen is a lot of newborn babies in the fridges, in the mortuaries.
So, do you want to talk about the number of newborn babies that you've seen in the mortuaries?
Oh, they're really high. They're up at about 30 in one hospital.
And how many would they usually have?
They have fridges that will hold about 6 to 10 maximum. And they're never normally full. But now, they're all in the adult section.
So there's about maybe 10 times the rate that they would usually have?
Yeah. And obviously there are either miscarried or full-term birth, stillbirths. But not a lot's been said about it.
Wow. And what else have you seen? Have you seen another sort of uptake in deaths in younger people recently?
Not in people under 20, and not in their 20s really. But above that, yes. Earlier in the summer when they all first went out and got vaxxed. But you see, what's going to happen is you're going to get the ones that are that it triggers something in them, or that they haven't got very good health that they maybe don't know about, so they will go first. And then down the line, we're probably going to see a lot more.
And what have you seen being put down on the death certificates?
There's a lot of myocarditis, myocardial infractions. You know, it's all blood, heart-based, pneumonia. But COVID, I've only had one this year. One COVID death written down since January.
Out of how many?
I couldn't tell you how many we've done, but if it's saying there's a pandemic going on, there should be more than that. But it's like they don't, they're not that bothered anymore. They can just twist their figures and do whatever.
Is that, so would that be hundreds that you do in a year? Or maybe 100?
Yeah, yeah. But you see, last year they were marking anybody and everybody down with it. You would have, they died of other things, they were testing them, and they were marking them down as COVID. But now, since the vaccination's been going, they're not doing that.
So do you think it's because they feel confident that these injections are working on people that they're not putting down?
Yeah, they're just scaring people on the TV.
So it's a psychological thing?
Yeah, yeah. Get your vaccination. And what they're going to do now, I don't know, when more and more people start dying of this vaccination. I mean, you've had the initial reactions, but what's going to happen down the line?
And so can I ask, in terms of them last year marking people down as COVID deaths, how many, what sort of proportion do you think were falsely attributed?
Oh, a high proportion, because they were testing everybody. So if you tested positive and that wasn't anything to do with it, I mean, I had one person really upset about it. The person was dying of something else. I think it was cancer at the time. And they marked it down as a COVID death. She'd never had COVID, but tested positive.
And were you seeing, so you're seeing other examples of this? So people dying of multiple different things and then it...
Yeah. And now you see there's no record of who's been vaccinated and who hasn't. That's going down on the certificates, and it should be.
And do you work with the families at all?
Not really, no.
So you don't get to speak to them and ask them any questions about whether they have had the injection or not?
No, it's a bit of a tricky thing to do unless they're on this subject, because it's quite private to them, so...
So what else have you noticed recently? You've noticed the massive uptick in babies. And can I ask, how old were these babies? Were they sort of newborns?
Well, yeah. Newborns or miscarried. I don't know any more than that. I just see them in the fridges, even without names. Baby of them and the parent's name.
Wow.
Yeah, it's shocking, and I'm sure there's many more people noticing it too. You see, we don't deal with newborn babies, so I don't get to see what goes on with them, but I see them in the fridges in the mortuaries.
And is there anything else that you'd like to tell me that I maybe haven't asked you?
Can't think of anything. Just that the deaths of adults are down right now. As I say, you've had the waves of people that have been affected by vaccines. Not that it's written down that they've died of vaccines, but it's there. And COVID's just non-existent.
And can I ask, what is your message to any other people who are thinking of speaking out, any other undertakers or nurses?
I say do it. Problem is with a lot of undertakers who are working for big companies, you're not allowed to speak out. But if you're seeing this, you need to speak out. I mean, it's there, it's clear as day. Nobody else sees these death certificates apart from us and the crematorium staff. So, it's all there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
All I can say is, wow. Wesley, the funeral director, certainly said a mouthful, didn't he? But then the Pfizer CEO, did you hear what he said this week? He says that people like me and this funeral director who are criticizing the jabs, who are questioning the jabs, who are warning people about some of the side effects of these jabs, we are criminals. He's saying that. He is calling people who are sharing the truth criminals. That's right, Alvin, really. And that's a very, very scary thing. And did you hear what he said there about a lot of funeral directors work for big corporations? This is happening everywhere, from medicine to mortuaries, from moving companies to big box stores selling you lumber. I remember when I was in my 20s, folks, back in the 1980s into the early 90s, I saw these different stores, from Heckinger's to 84 Lumber to, I never even heard of Lowe's or Home Depot. But all these other ones that were out there, all these regional stores were gobbled up by Lowe's and Home Depot. So now we have basically the two giants controlling the entire lumber industry in the United States and basically most of the home improvement. Well, like I said, it's happening everywhere. And what's at the base of this? Well, you can't speak up because you'll lose your job. Isn't it crazy? Think about this, folks. The powers that be, they never denied that this bioweapon that they've euphemistically called a vaccine and that they've been injecting people with for nearly a year now is very effective. They never deny that, but they don't tell you what its efficacy actually is. It's not for the stop. Actually, people are starting to realize it doesn't stop transmission or actually infect. Now they're saying, boy, I'm sure glad I got that jab because I could have died without that. I was sicker than a dog, but I could have died if I didn't have that jab. Well, how do you know? What about Joe Rogan? What about that quarterback? I just forgot his name. He's following that same protocol. What about my sister who did it? What about my sister who's a registered nurse and has seen all this fallout that the funeral director has seen, refuses to get the jab, contracts COVID at work, gets as sick as a dog. They want to put her on that death protocol, and she says no, and she has to sign herself out with a waiver to get out of the hospital. 2 days on ivermectin, my sister's better. That's firsthand knowledge, folks. I witnessed it. No, they don't talk about this. They have had so many casualties up to this point that it's going to pale in comparison what the United States lost in the Civil War, the war between the states. But it's going to take months and even years for it to fully manifest, so people won't be able to make the association. The deep state is using this silent weapon and censoring our speech as a part of their big plan for this quiet war to bring about the Great Reset, where we will own nothing and like it. And in addition, they have this massive population depopulation agenda. Remember, their goal is to get the population down from 7 billion to 0.5 billion. So if you want to do the math simply, around you in a room of 15 people, only one person will remain standing. And that's what it boils down to, folks. But we have to keep moving. Right now, it's time for our Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater. In Japanese, ka means salt, bu means dance. Ki means skill from the verb, kabu meaning to slant or display. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flatten the curve. The curvy economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or will hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all, Trump, bad, must go. Good is bad, bad is good. Up is down, light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for Agenda 2030 and the new world. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Yes, folks, please wake up. Wake America, like Stephen Jacobson says. And what was the root of that? What is the root of all evil? The love of money and paper money is the cause of what we're... Now, I have this clip in the Kabuki Theater section because it's part of the Cloward-Piven plan to destroy America. And what I'd like to do is set the stage before we play this clip, okay? So there was a good article out there in the Gateway Pundit by Wayne Root, titled "The Vaccine Mandate is the Cloward-Piven Plan to Destroy U.S. and End Capitalism." Now, we've talked about the Cloward-Piven Plan in the past, and this was a thesis hatched as a goofy plan at Columbia University back in the 80s by a husband and wife team known as Cloward and Piven. And they had this insane goal to turn America into a socialist communist hellhole, literally. And they planned to do it with a two-step. First, they wanted to overwhelm and collapse the U.S. economy with massive debt and inefficiencies. And that's essentially what we see happening right now, isn't it? These companies are struggling to stay alive. Folks, I know. I know what's going on. We have a superior technology in our industry. We have a finely honed technology and a very experienced workforce. And because of all this disruption to the supply chain and everything else needed to be efficient in manufacturing, spending a lot of money that we shouldn't have to. Now, I think by the grace of God, we'll be okay provided Jesus doesn't return. But this is the method, the madness that's happening all across the world right now. Did you hear what the energy secretary and the Biden regime had to say? Their plan is to bankrupt small coal and gas companies to advance their green agenda. Now, the second thing in the Cloward-Piven plan is to create a welfare state by getting as many Americans on government handouts, the dole, so to speak, with cash every month, food stamps, unemployment perks, you know, the plus-ups. And by doing all this, you're creating the environment where people will be herded into the metaverse and grid their social behavior and basically eat if they comply and starve if they don't. Now, in this ensuing economic catastrophe and the collapse of our country, every business owner is going to have to get on their knees and beg big government to save them if they don't want to go under. Then at this moment of crisis, we become literally a socialist communistic country. And I'm just going to ask you a question, folks. Need I say more? Think about it. Now, a lot of people across the country are waking up to this. And these Procter & Gamble employees who put together this next advertisement, if you call that, it's about 2 minutes and 20 seconds. They know that they're being threatened by termination if they refuse to get jabbed. So what they've done is they've put together this very well-produced message to America. And they open with what we've already seen happen to the airline industry will soon happen to many other organizations. They're warning America that you're not going to be able to get the basic products that you've grown accustomed to using in your day-to-day life if we, the people, don't stand up and say no to these vax mandates. So let's listen to this 2 minute and 20 second clip put together by the employees of Procter & Gamble. You know, the people that bring you Crest toothpaste, fabric softeners, so many personal care products from, I think they own Old Spice and the deodorant and body washes and so many other things that people use every day in their day-to-day lives. But listen to this clip.
We are Procter & Gamble.
You don't know our names.
You don't know our faces.
But there are thousands of us.
And we work to produce the brands and products you use every single day.
Pampers.
Tide.
Tampax.
Charmin.
Gillette. Febreze. Crest. Oral-B.
Secret.
And many more.
Some of us have been working here for 30 years.
Some of us have been working here for 30 months.
But we all have one thing in common.
Because our company has threatened us with termination in the near future.
For daring to say, our bodies, our choice.
On our own website, we have a line that states, we show respect for all individuals.
This is something our leaders preach to us every single day.
But it is something that they have failed to put into practice.
And it is why we can't even show our faces in this video for fear of retribution.
Instead of respect, many of us in this company have been subjected to name-calling, exclusion, and general disgust.
For simply exercising our right to choose what we put in our bodies.
Being forced to decide between termination or indefinite discriminatory testing requirements that P&G can eliminate at their discretion at any time is not a choice.
It's coercion, plain and simple.
You, the consumer, may not care about us being attacked.
You may not even care if we're terminated.
But know this.
You'll start to care when our termination begins to affect you personally.
What you've already seen happen to the airline industry will soon happen to many other organizations in America and around the world.
When shipping speeds slow to a crawl and you can't acquire basic necessities, remember you could have stopped it from happening.
When the factories in which we work grind to a halt, you will be to blame.
So what can you do to stop this?
Reach out to our company and tell them their overreach will not be tolerated.
Or do nothing. And watch how quickly you are affected.
So do the right thing.
Speak out and make your voice heard to our leadership.
Your future depends on it.
That's right, folks. It's coming. Now you may say, what's coming? Well, democracy is coming to the USA.
What?
That's right, Paul. You may say, well, I thought we were a democracy. No, we're a constitutional republic. And Lenin said, democracy is indispensable to socialism. You know, all those things that the Americans are having to do now, they have to go on welfare, they have to get food stamps, they have to get their unemployment plus ups, their rent rebates. That's socialism, folks. It's indispensable to communism. Now, when I was putting the show notes together for this, I thought of a song that I first heard on the Hour of the Time probably 30 years ago. William Cooper played it at his Half a Break. And it was written by Leonard Cohen, and it's titled Democracy. And I'd like to play it. It's a five-minute clip, and I'd like you to just listen to the words. Leonard Cohen was a brilliant man. He's no longer with us. He was a poet, a philosopher, a musician. He had that gravelly voice, and just listen to the words in this song about democracy. And I hope it resonates with you.
they're going down so deep, the river's gonna weep and the mountain's gonna shout amen. It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway, imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
Yeah, that's right, folks. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, but it's real exactly there. Isn't that the metaverse? Isn't that what we've been talking about? Isn't that what Klaus Schwab said, folks? By 2030, you will own nothing and you'll like it. Isn't that what Zuckerberg was talking about on his announcement of the rebranding of Facebook and the metaverse? A reality that people are actually going to like more than true reality? Folks, this is crazy. This is nuts. And I'm telling you, folks, we can't sit around and just do nothing. We, the people, have to stand up and say no more. Now, it's time for our newest segment, which is Coop Talk with Henrietta. And Henrietta, I have a special one prepared for you today. Yeah, there you are. I wonder where you're at. Now, you're going to have to stay very calm today. And folks, usually we talk about prepping in this section. But what I'd like to do, Henrietta, is share a story with you today and all you listeners. The title of the story is The Mouse in the House. Are you ready for this, Henrietta? Are you ready for the mouse in the house? Henrietta, where are you? You're supposed to be listening. Okay, there you are. Okay, so let's get started with the mouse in the house. Once upon a time, a mouse looked through the crack in the wall to see a farmer and his wife open up a package. Now the mouse wondered what food it might contain, but the mouse was devastated to discover it was a mouse trap. So he ran out into the farmyard, sounding the alarm and shouting, "There's a mouse trap in the house! A mouse trap in the house!" Now, Henrietta, get this. The chicken clucked and scratched and raised her head and said, "Mr. Mouse, I can tell this is a grave concern to you, but it's of no consequence to me. I can't be bothered by it." Then the mouse turned to the pig and said, "Mr. Pig, there's a mouse trap in the house! There's a mouse trap in the house!" And the pig was sympathetic, but all he said was, "I'm so very sorry, Mr. Mouse, but there's nothing I can do about it. But I'll pray, and be assured, you're in my prayers." So the mouse then turned to the cow and said, "There's a mouse trap in the house, a mouse trap in the house." And the cow replied, "Wow, Mr. Mouse, I'm sorry for you, but it's no skin off my back." So sadly, Mr. Mouse went back to the house with his head low and very dejected. And he had to face the farmer's mouse trap all alone. Then that very night, while asleep, Mr. Mouse heard that ominous sound. We've all heard it before, haven't we? In the middle of the night, when the mouse trap goes off, the sound heard throughout the house, the sound of that deadly mouse catching its prey. We all know it. Now, upon hearing that sound, the farmer's wife thought she caught a trap, so she went out in the darkness expecting the mouse. She didn't notice that a venomous snake had caught its tail in the mouse trap instead of the mouse. Now, doing what all snakes do, the snake bit the farmer's wife, and the farmer rushed out to see his wife in despair, so he rushed her to the hospital, and she returned home a day later with a fever. Now, everyone knows how you treat a fever. You starve a cold, and what do? With a fever? You feed a fever. And what do you feed a fever? Henrietta, what do most people eat when they have a cold, when they have a fever? Chicken soup. So the farmer took the hatchet to the farmyard for the main ingredient of the soup, the chicken. That's right. But sadly, his wife's sickness continued, and the friends and neighbors came to sit with her around the clock. So he needed some more food to feed them all. So what did the farmer do? Well, he butchered the pig. That's right. Many people then said, oh my, the woman is sick and she's not getting better. And sadly, soon she died. And the people mourned her loss. And they came to the mercy dinner. And the farmer knew, I'm going to need a lot of feed for all these folks. So what did he do? He had his cow slaughtered for a feast for all the mourners. Sorry about that, folks. I'm sitting here trying to do this enough to be the sound man. I'm sorry. But anyways, throughout this all, that mouse looked out from the crack in the wall with great sadness. So, Henrietta, the moral of the story is the next time you have someone facing a problem, like all of these poor people losing their jobs right now over these unrighteous, crazy vaccine mandates, and you don't think it's a concern for you, remember the mouse in the house. Folks, remember those Procter & Gamble employees who passionately plead to you and me to do something, to contact these companies and tell them this is intolerable. Call your hospital and tell them these nurses and these healthcare workers were there for you and your family during this crisis, and now you're firing them because they know this jab is no good. Do nothing and face the consequences, the collapse of our society. But folks, I have to keep moving right now. It's time for our Hopium update and the Hopium report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
Now, I struggled this week to find something for a second when I found a video message given to the MAGA supporters and We the People by former President Trump, titled "The Democratic Party is a House of Cards Ready to Tumble Down." It was a very good speech, a very stirring political talk, and it talked about the coming red wave, you know, and he opens with, I stand before you this evening to say that if we do our jobs and if we stick together, then exactly 1 year from today, we're going to be watching a massive red wave sweep across the country, and we're going to be celebrating the election of the largest House Republican majority in the American history. Well, guess what, folks? We had a majority back in 2016. And what did those rhinos do? Nothing. And then he goes on to talk about the victories that happened last week in Virginia, New Jersey, Seattle, and very importantly in Ohio, with the election of Mike Carey to the Congress. And he goes on, and he bashes Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and the Radical Democratic Party. And then he talks about the future of the Republican Party. It's going to save the country. Yeah. He goes on and talks about how wonderful the Republicans are. And then he enumerates the Republican agenda. All good. I mean, folks, everything in here is good. But they had their chance back in 2016. And what did they do? And then he wraps up his talk with the insane Democratic spending bill. And again, everything's very good in there. But the point I'm trying to make, folks, as I hope you're awake now to see that President Trump was nothing but controlled opposition, he was brought in to draw out those of us who oppose the New World Order. So what he's basically done for the establishment is draw a line in the U.S. population between the sheep and the sheepdogs. You know, they're the wolves, the establishment. There's three types of people in the world. Remember that, folks. The sheep, which are the vast majority, the wolves, which are the minority, and then the sheepdogs, people like you and me who know the truth and are trying to wake others up. And folks, I'm telling you, Trump's right in the middle of it with them. In essence, he's playing the good guy, you know? Good cop, bad cop, Scottish Rite versus the French Rite of Freemasonry. And folks, I've done entire shows on that. President Trump is part of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. And what's in control right now are the godless French Freemasons. But the Scottish Rite, although they believe in God, their God is the great architect. Their God is the fallen angel Lucifer, who got a bum deal. Now, if he gets elected again, we are finished, because it allows them to continue in a way that people think they won. Folks, I'm telling you, President Trump is the answer. We, the people, are the answer. Still don't believe me? Still believe President Trump is who he says he is? Well, did you know he's heavily invested in BlackRock? You know, BlackRock's the one that's been going around buying up all the residential homes with the stimulus money. Did you know that President Trump is heavily invested in AstraZeneca? Plus another big tech foreign company who's going to be the first to roll out a combination flu COVID vaccine that's going to cause more problems. And here's another tidbit for the truly brainwashed. MAGA. What does MAGA mean? Make America great again? Oh, yeah, that's what they say. But did you know it's the fifth degree in the Church of Satan? And in Nigeria, it's slang for an easily fooled idiot. Just saying, folks. But right now, it's time for our Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
Newsflash, folks. Breaking news just in. U.S. President Biden, imposter-in-chief himself, is a major greenhouse gas emitter. That's right, folks. You're going to hear it here on the SDG crisis update. But did you know that at the COP26 2 weeks ago in Glasgow, Scotland, or Ireland, I guess it is, the Duchess of Cornwall actually... And I need to do a caution here, okay? Before I get into this story, I don't want to offend any of you. There's some bathroom humor here. But I do have a point I need to make. Sometimes it's necessary to do these things. So I want to share with you what happened at the COP26 summit. Apparently President Biden was speaking with Duchess of Cornwall, Camilla, you know, the wife to King-in-waiting, and what Prince Charles will be, who knows. But anyways, Camilla was speaking with President Trump, and apparently good old Joe let one rip at the COP26 summit. And I heard Camilla say, "How dare you fart before me?" And Joe said, "Sorry, babe, but I didn't know it was your turn." Sorry, had to do that. Had to lighten this up a little bit, folks. This isn't the first time the imposter-in-chief Biden has had problems controlling his bowels. There was the meeting in the Vatican a few weeks earlier with the reptilian Marxist Pope Francis. But did you know he was actually doing this last year before the election still? He had a campaign stump on air with Governor Wolf here from Pennsylvania. He was on ABC. And I have the clip in the video, and you can actually see Governor Wolf wince when this happened. But I'd like to play it. It's just a very short clip. It's 5 seconds.
Or stop work on roads and bridges.
Yes, yes, yes.
What does a human cost?
I'll play it again, but I kind of amplified it there and played it 3 times over, but I couldn't get his voice out. But just listen to the first half of this clip.
Or stop work on roads and bridges.
Yes,
there
yes,
it is.
Yes.
What does a human cost?
So why am I making such a big deal about this? Folks, you should have seen Governor Ward's reaction when the false president, the imposter in chief, couldn't control his bowels. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, what's the big deal? It's a natural bodily function. But I'm going to ask you something. Would you do that in church or at a PTA meeting? Or let's say you're a businessman and you're in a very important business meeting with your banker and an equipment vendor where you're going to place $2 million of capital assets in your operation. Would you sit there and pass gas during that meeting? Would you let one rip unashamed? How does that affect the people around you? What if Jimmy Carter did that while he was negotiating the peace deal in the Middle East, you know, the Middle East, or President Nixon when he was in his talks with China, when President Trump visited Korea? What's my point? Well, folks, my point is that an incontinent, senile old man who can't control his bowels and is suffering from dementia is in the process of flushing the strongest country in the world down the toilet. And nobody seems to care. Nothing's being done. We're the laughingstock of the world after the debacle in Afghanistan. And this man, this usurper, is sitting in the office of the President of the United States. This man has the title POTUS. Does it bother you? Remember that line out of the democracy song we played? It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA. Folks, I'm telling you, this is real. We need to get up. We people need to get up. Resist. We need to understand what kingdom of authority is. And I'm going to get to that into this message. But right now, folks, we have to keep moving. It's time now for Ken's Corner. Spell the K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
We've all heard the term the red pill moment. You know, it's from The Matrix. And looking at my time here. Yeah, you know what? I have time to play that. So let's do that. I'm going to call up the red pill. And let's see. There it is. Red pill or blue pill? I have a short clip and a long clip. I'm going to play the 35-second clip to set up my testimony, so to speak. You know, a Christian has a testimony and how they came to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. Well, as truthers, you also have your red pill moment. And here it is summed up in a 35-second clip from the classic The Matrix.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
And folks, that's all I offer you here on these SDG emergency updates is the truth, nothing more. You know from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. You know that. So it's your choice whether you're going to take that red pill or that blue pill. Well, one of the first things that red pilled me, folks, was listening to Stephen Jacobson's Wake Up America that we just finished episode or segment 10 with today. That's when my illusion concerning the paper money system was shattered, and this was back in the early 90s. Looking at dollar bills and $5 bills and $50 bills and $100 bills and saying, They're all the same. They're all a piece of paper with more zeros on them and maybe a five instead of a one. What's going on here? I did, folks. I'd have a $20 bill in my wallet, look at it, and then I'd close my eyes and feel a dollar bill, and I'd say there's no difference. Now, I had been a coin collector, so then I took a $5 gold coin and I held it in my hand. And it's small, very small. And I held a $20 coin in my hand. And I'm telling you, folks, you can feel the difference. And then I took a dollar, a silver dollar, and I held it. And I held the $20 gold coin in my other hand, and you could feel the difference. And why? Because it's real. But it ain't exactly there anymore. It's coming from the feel that it ain't exactly real. Folks, the root of all evil is the love of money. Now, that woke me up. And then I started to realize this governmental system's corrupt. This legal system is corrupt. Education system is corrupt. Now, imagine this. I'm living in the world in the 90s, which was all still pretty normal, folks, but I'm feeling this thing that it ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. You know, holding that silver dollar in one hand, holding that $20 gold coin in the other, and realizing we're not using this anymore. So this week, Michael Snyder comes out and warns us of this impending economic collapse. And it's a very good article, and I'd encourage you to read it. You can go out to Michael Snyder's website. Zero Hedges picks it up, and it's titled, "They Have Lost Control." And folks, they have. You know, inflation right now on the government metric, which has changed like four or five times since the Clinton administration, is about 1% per month or nearly 12% per year. Now, most people define hyperinflation as upwards of 20 to 50% inflation per year. Now, if you go to shadowstats.com and you look at John Williams and his research, you'll see that we're actually about 2 to 3X what the actual reporting by the federal government is. And John Williams is a little bit behind on the curve because he has to use compiled data. Calculating, he's not forecasting, he's using actual data. So if you go to shadowstats.com and you look at the excellent work of John Williams, you'll see that we're nearly at hyperinflation levels right now. So it's coming from the feel, folks. You go to the store and you see beef for $20 a pound. Gasoline here now is $3.55 a pound, a gallon, I mean. And just a few weeks ago, it was $3.33. Isn't it interesting how these numbers pop up? Well, a year ago, it was about $2.25 a gallon. Folks, it's coming, and we have to be prepared. Even Joe Biden used the term in a recent press conference that prices are exceedingly high. And other forms of energy are becoming a lot more expensive. And did you hear what the energy secretary said in a presser this week? Well, yeah, and that's going to cause the bankruptcy of a lot of small coal and gas companies. But that's our plan. She admitted it. She said the unspoken, folks. Democracy is coming to the USA, folks. So have you had your red pill moment? Do you understand what's happening here? I encourage you to go out and read Michael Snyder's latest article. You know, we've interviewed Michael several times on Tribulation Now, and he's the real deal, folks, and it's very important. Take a look at everything that's going on. You know, Congress just passed that gigantic spending bill. What was it, $1.5 trillion? And remember what a trillion dollars is. It's this huge number that most people can't get their mind around. In a past show, I said if you picture $1 million in terms of seconds, so every dollar is a second, you'd have about 11 minutes of seconds to get to a million. So what would a billion be? Well, a billion would be about 30 years expressed as seconds. That gives you the perspective. Okay? So what's a trillion if a billion is 30 years? Well, a trillion is 30,000 years expressed as seconds, you know, tick, tick, tick. You'd have to do that for 30,000 years to count to $1 trillion. These numbers are inconceivable, so most people don't understand them, and that's the problem. But now, we talked about rabbit holes, and you heard that in the Matrix clip. I'm warning you, be careful about rabbit holes. So many in the alt media are embracing these new age lies, and it's coming from everywhere, even people who are out there fighting the good fight. And it's every, like I said, it's everywhere. There's a clip I'd like to play for you from X22 Report, and it was episode number 2621 titled Bright Future, and it was heard by Dave over at the X22 Report on November 7th, 2021. It's 2 minutes, and just listen to Dave. That's strange. I don't hear Dave. Dave, where
Let's talk
are
about
you?
Our health. We're only just.
I don't know what's wrong with this clip. I guess it's not going to play. That's very strange. Well, let me tell you what Dave said in this clip. And I don't know, I've never had a failure like that on the soundboard before. But what Dave was saying, and you know, folks, he has a lot of good information. He does. And that's why I go out there and check, because he's a good compiler of what's actually happening. But what he said was, you know, things are going to get really, really bad, which I think we all see. But then there's going to be a golden age. Well, you know what, folks? There will be a golden age. But that doesn't happen until Jesus returns, after he calls back his saints. But we have all these people out there talking about the golden age. You know, the Patriot Street Fighter and a lot of others like him, and God bless him. I know Scott. Scott and I have spent hours on the phone. I've kind of drifted away from him because, you know, you can only do so much with the time the Lord's given us. And I started to hear him promote this New Age concept of ascension. And I shot him a couple warnings about that, but he continued down that path. And even Mike Adam, who confesses to be a Christian, preaches a gospel of works rather than a gospel of grace, just like my former partner John Seitzinger does on Tribulation Now. And even people like Dr. Tenpenny and Mike the Pillow Guy and Ty and Charlene, all these folks, God bless them, good people, you know, they're in the health movement. They're all into this new age persuasion of the truth. And folks, I'm telling you, that will lead to nothing but trouble in the end. So God bless them all, and I am not trash talking them here, so please, please, don't think I am. I'm just warning you that a lot of these people in the truth movement, although they're sharing with you truth on a lot of different topics, from health to money to the MAGA movement to all the different things that are going on out there. But the one thing that you have to be very careful about is avoid the rabbit holes concerning the faith once delivered unto the saints. They're offering you all sorts of false gospels out there. And I am telling you, I love these people and their passion for speaking the truth, but they are woefully ignorant concerning true spirituality. So these folks have really good information. People like Gregory Manarino, great sources of information. But they are not Bible-believing Christians. Sure, Gregory will give you the best analysis of the financial situation with an understanding better than anybody concerning this criminal cabal. But don't get confused with the stinking thinking concerning your eternal destiny. So my message to you folks is just be careful. And that's how so many people get sidetracked down these inconsequential rabbit holes as they become red-pilled and hunger and thirst for more and more knowledge. You know, after I got saved and I understood the basic gospel message, I thought, well, I understand that. Now I got to get back to the real battle, which is the truth movement. And boy, folks, I almost got sucked down a rabbit hole that I couldn't get out of. So I think their intentions are good, but you need to stay grounded in the faith. Amen? So these people's hearts may be in the right place, But remember, it's all about Jesus. So just be careful when you listen to people like Celeste or Mike Adams, Hal Turner, BP Earthwatch, Paul Begley, even Paul, the guy I play the what clip on, Mike, you know, from around the world. And especially Singer, and I'm saying that because a lot of you listen to John and a lot of you are moved by his prayers, and God bless him. But I've had hour-long plus conversations with him concerning the gospel. And frankly, folks, he's preaching a gospel of works. We are saved by grace through faith, which is a gift, lest any man should boast. And remember that. So just be careful when they start talking about eternal destiny and the golden age and all that. But enough said. Amen. So what I'd like to do right now is move on to our next segment, which is Back to the Future, where we take something old and bring it back to the future. So let's wind the clock back this week, folks, to 1999. And then that's the year that Ray Kurzweil, remember we listened to a clip from him at the beginning of the show where he was talking about nanotechnology being used to connect our neocortex to the cloud. And that's real. And I was talking with my friend Seth, who we've played a few clips on, and he actually got a very high-powered microscope from his friend, who is a veterinarian, and they've been looking at the fallout from the sky. You know, we have the chemtrails, and they're finding all these nanoparticles in there with crystalline structure and spiral structures, and he has documented all of this, folks. And I said to him, why are these things being sprayed in the skies? Well, it's an enabling technology heard Kurzweil just talk about in the clip with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And then he also got his hands on a vial of the COVID vaccine. And all the things you've been hearing about the strange anomalies in there, the sensitivity and attraction to light and heat, he's confirmed, all folks. And I'm going to try to get down there to a shop this weekend so that I can see it firsthand. He's taken hours of videos. Now, he ran out of the stain that's used, a non-toxic stain that helps you differentiate or see the images under high magnification. And he used a little bit of iodine. And he said immediately upon placing the drop of iodine on the microscope slide, all of the mobility, all the motion in that vaccine went away. So let's wind the clock back to 1999 and take a look at this book written by Ray Kurzweil. It was titled The Age of the Spiritual Machines When Computers Exceed Human Intelligence. Now, before we get into the book, let me give you a little background on who Ray is. Well, Ray Kurzweil is one of the leading inventors and thinkers and futurists of our time. He has a 30-year track record for accurate predictions of where technology will go. I'm wondering, he could have been a consultant on that Black Mirror series. He's been called the restless genius by the Wall Street Journal and the ultimate thinking machine by Forbes, selected as one of the top entrepreneurs by Inc. magazine, who described him as a rightful heir to Thomas Edison's throne as inventor extraordinaire. PBS selected him as one of the 16 revolutionaries who helped make America. So what did Ray Kurzweil do? Well, he was the principal inventor of the CCD flatbed scanner, and that's used in all your photocopy machines and anything that scans an image and makes a PDF copy. A CCD is a charge-coupled device. I used to use it in the laboratory back at the University of Pittsburgh to count photons from Raman scattering technology. It's a whole area of spectroscopy, but a charge-coupled device is also what's used in your cell phone camera. So it just basically takes a photon and converts it to a digital data point, and then that's what creates these beautiful images we call pictures. So he developed the first CCD flatbed scanner, the first OmniFont optical character recognition, so you scan a document and then you read a document, and the first to develop print-to-speech reading machines for the blind. So you could take a document, scan it into one of these devices, and then have it read you back what the document said. He also developed the first music synthesizer. It was capable of creating all of the orchestra sounds, from a grand piano to a trumpet to a violin, and everybody has those now. You can buy one for $100 at Walmart. And he also developed the first commercially marketed large vocabulary speech recognition technology. And folks, I've been an early adopter in technology for years. I have one called Dragon. I bought it back in 1999, and you had to teach it. Well, now you have it on your phone. I just tap the little microphone and talk into it, and it prints everything I speak. In fact, I could do this entire show for transcript that way. He's also written 5 national best-selling books, including New York Times best-selling The Singularity Is Near back in 2005 and How to Create a Mind in 2012. He's the co-founder and chancellor of the Singularity Group at the University of Google, you know, Google, their university, just like McDonald's does. McDonald's has a training center, I believe, out in Chicago, where all of their experts on restaurant management and fast food service, or what they call the QSRs, are actually trained. So this man is a credible man. And I have about 1, 2, 3 pages of single-space quotes from his book. Now, I don't have time to read all these. I'll just give you a couple. In the prologue, he wrote, "The human species is still challenged by issues and difficulties not altogether different than those with which it was struggling since the beginning of recorded history." And he goes on to say in another one on page 41, "DNA is a very efficient programmer. Most of the codes, 97% according to current estimates, do not compute and appear to be useless." Well, that's the waste DNA, the garbage DNA that we spoke about. That means that the effective part of the code is only about 23 megabytes, which is less than the code for Microsoft Word. And remember what we heard earlier. Microsoft is saying they're going to be able to hack the human DNA. And he goes on to suggest that a future individual who he just randomly calls Jack will have the option of scanning his entire brain and neural system and replacing it with electronic circuits of far greater capacity. Remember the Black Mirror episode I mentioned where the woman loses her husband in an auto crash and then she starts to use a digitized form of his personality, first in terms of text messaging, then in terms of phone calls, and then she actually purchases a cyborg. Folks, this stuff is not science fiction anymore. So Ray's on top of all this. And why am I telling you all this? Well, now what I'd like to do is wind the clock ahead to 2014. So he wrote this book at the turn of the millennium, and I want to go ahead to 2014. And there was an article written on this website called digitaltonto.com, and it was titled, "Why the Future of Technology is All Too Human." And this writer, Greg Sattel, points out that we have a great need for our young people to engage in critical thinking, something that's been lacking for years. And folks, I've been saying that on this show since day one. In fact, we did a whole show on critical thinking. And he argues that it's to provide value in the future for machine operators who are learning how to do nothing but push buttons. And if they do develop critical thinking, it's going to elevate their ability to see this and to solve problems before we're enslaved by artificial intelligence and these androids and robots. Now, in another interview back in 2010, Kurzweil said that the accelerating power of technology is going to lead to a point where computers will disappear and they'll become so small that they're actually going to be embedded in our clothing or even in our own bodies. And it's happening, folks. So what I'd like to do right now is play this second clip from Kurzweil, where he talks about the power of technology. It's a 3-minute and 18-second clip.
So let me just end with a couple of scenarios. By 2010, computers will disappear. They'll be so small, they'll be embedded in our clothing, in our environment. Images will be written directly to our retina, providing full immersion virtual reality, augmented real reality. We'll be interacting with virtual personalities. But if we go to 2029, we really have the full maturity of these trends, and you have to appreciate how many turns of the screw in terms of generations of technology, which are getting faster and faster, we'll have at that point. We will have 2 to the 25th power, greater price performance capacity and bandwidth of these technologies, which is pretty phenomenal. It'll be millions of times more powerful than it is today. We'll have completed the reverse engineering of the human brain. $1,000 of computing will be far more powerful than the human brain in terms of basic raw capacity. Computers will combine the subtle pattern recognition powers of human intelligence with ways in which machines are already superior in terms of doing analytic thinking, remembering billions of facts accurately. Machines can share their knowledge very quickly. But it's not just an alien invasion of intelligent machines. We are going to merge with our technology. These nanobots I mentioned will first be used for medical and health applications, cleaning up the environment, providing powerful fuel cells and widely distributed decentralized solar panels and so on in the environment. But they'll also go inside our brain, interact with our biological neurons. We've demonstrated the key principles of being able to do this. So, for example, full immersion virtual reality from within the nervous system, the nanobots shut down the signals coming from your real senses, replace them with the signals that your brain would be receiving if you were in the virtual environment, and then it'll feel like you're in that virtual environment. You can go there with other people, have any kind of experience with anyone involving all of the senses. Experience beamers, I call them, will put their whole flow of sensory experiences and the neurological correlates of their emotions out on the internet. You can plug in and experience what it's like to be someone else. But most importantly, it'll be a tremendous expansion of human intelligence through this direct merger with our technology, which in some sense we're doing already. We routinely do intellectual feats that would be impossible without our technology. Human life expectancy is expanding. It was 37 in 1800. And with this sort of biotechnology and nanotechnology revolutions, this will move up very rapidly in the years ahead. My main message is that progress in technology is exponential, not linear. Many, even scientists, assume a linear model. So they'll say, oh, it'll be hundreds of years before we have self-replicating nanotechnology assembly or artificial intelligence. If you really look at the power of exponential growth, you'll see that these things are pretty soon at hand. And information technology is increasingly encompassing all of our lives, from our music to our manufacturing to our biology to our energy to materials. We'll be able to manufacture almost anything we need in the 2020s from information and very inexpensive raw materials using nanotechnology. These are very powerful technologies. They both empower our promise and our peril. So we have to have the will to apply them to the right problems. Thank you very much.
So he says that knowledge increases exponentially. Well, God told us that thousands and thousands of years ago in Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, where the angel spoke to Daniel and said, roll up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. So basically, he's telling Daniel that there's going to be knowledge is just going to exponentially increase. And it's here now, folks. So these sociopaths are literally creating a false reality, a place where we'll go. And it's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. That's what Leonard Cohen said. I think he was prescient, folk. I think he knew, prophetic in a way. So how does this apply to today? Well, just this Thursday, folks, I was going down to the pantry to get a spare container of half and half out of the refrigerator, and I heard the Breakpoint commentary on Thursday. And Breakpoint was talking about the metaverse. This is a 4-minute and 48-second clip. Listen to the Breakpoint's observation concerning the metaverse.
A virtual reality universe, no matter how real, can never hold a candle to the real thing. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Back in 1974, philosopher Robert Nozick proposed a thought experiment. He called it the experience machine. He hoped to challenge hedonism with the experiment, the belief that the highest good in life is finding the most pleasure. Now, at the time, Nozick took for granted that ultimately people would choose the real experience over the machine-generated one. He believed that people would want to do things rather than just have a fake experience of doing things. He also believed that people were still hungry for a reality bigger than any man-made experience machine could provide. Quote, "We learn that something matters to us in addition to experience by imagining an experience machine and then realizing we would not use it," wrote Nozick. Well, apparently he never met Mark Zuckerberg. A few weeks ago, the billionaire founder of Facebook announced the company's new venture, Meta. The idea is to create a world of simulation in which people can broadly live their lives. Zuckerberg imagines that, using VR technology, people would be able to go to the office, visit family and friends, do almost anything in simulated or partially simulated places. We could make digital offices and then buy digital art to hang on our digital office walls. And we could buy digital clothes to wear to these digital offices. And since everyone else would be using the Meta as well, we can just meet them at the digital office. Such a tool would also allow us to visit family and friends in remote places, exotic locations, all kinds of things. Now, according to the team at Facebook, it will be at least a decade before technology reaches the point where it can enable the launch of a metaverse. But Zuckerberg seems pretty confident that, all things considered equal, people will come to prefer it to the real thing. And if anyone has the resources, not to mention the built-in base of ready and willing customers to try it, to pull off something like this, well, it's Facebook. Of course, technological advancement is never inherently bad in and of itself. In fact, this sort of technology is only compelling to us because of the technological habits we've already embraced as a society, some that are good and some that are not so good. For example, the very same technology that allows us to work from home and be closer to our kids is also leading us to increasingly replace in-person relationships with online ones. And this brings up one of the glaring problems of the metaverse idea. It encourages us, at least implicitly, to forget about our bodies. This is something made possible by a pre-existing condition of our cultural moment, an irony of the sexual revolution, one that sought to make bodily pleasure a central object of our worship, but now treats the body as if it can be made and remade and remade and remolded into whatever our minds choose. In such a world like this one, it's essential that we remind each other we're not just minds or feelings. Our bodies are much more than mere tools that serve or get in the way of our experience in the world. We worship as bodies and with our bodies. We serve others as bodies and with our bodies. And we make new people who are in no small part bodies with our bodies. God, in fact, secured our salvation by becoming flesh. Discernment on this front is absolutely crucial because culture often changes and changes us so subtly. The metaverse isn't going to be theoretical one day and then a full reality the next. If it happens, it'll happen by degrees. In fact, the process of acceptance is already firmly in place. Technology makes something in life more convenient. We embrace it. Before long, what's convenient becomes unavoidable, then necessary. Even if we personally opt out of the thing, it can still be an essential part of the cultural waters in which we swim. So you may not have a Facebook account today, but Facebook is more and more an integral part of how the worlds of commerce, politics, education, to a degree, even personal relationships, now work. So if we're closer to plugging into Nozick's experience machine today than we were in 1974, it's not because we're somehow dumber today. It's because the machine has been built one component at a time. And we find each and every part enticing and helpful. The tragedy happens when we wait to question each component of the machine until one day when we wake up and find that we're already plugged into it. Throughout the process, Christians need to stay consciously embodied and rabidly discerning. Doesn't mean we eschew every new technology. The key is that we use technology in service to our flourishing as embodied souls. And to make sure we don't let technology redefine what it means to be human or what it means to flourish. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Let's get a question, folks. With all of this that you've heard, with all of this corruption and plotting and planning by the powers that be, you know, the proverbial they, I'm going to ask you one simple question, folks. Are you tempted to rebel today? Are you ready to call for revolution? Well, if so, I'm warning you to beware. That's what they want, folks. Did you know that you'll never be more like the devil than when you rebel, and never more like Jesus than when you submit. Now, if we're to be under the authority set over us, what do we do when a government or a boss or a spouse has unworthy authority? Well, in 1 Samuel chapter 24, verses 1 through 7, the scripture speaks specifically to this issue. And what I'd like to do this week and next week is talk with you how I've learned to gain victory by submission to the authority that's over me as a believer in Jesus Christ. Now, I'm going to use this story from King David, who was a mighty warrior, and I believe he was the kind of man who exercised kingdom authority. And he eventually became king and went from victory to victory. Now, he did have his shortfalls, like all of us, because we're all sinners, saved by grace, and he's no different. But he was a man known for victory, and his greatest victory ever recorded is found in this chapter of the Bible. But it actually wasn't a victory over somebody else. In truth, it was a victory over himself, and that's what each and every one of us have to understand. Here, David achieved a victory over self and learned a lesson that you and me have to learn if we're going to be able to exercise kingdom authority. So to have kingdom authority, we must remain under the authority of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And we have to always, always, in the midst of all this craziness going on, remember this biblical truth. Folks, I'm telling you, it's not God's plan for you and me as believers to be defeated by this world, the flesh, or the devil. But when Jesus died and rose from the grave, what he did was give children, that's you and me, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, kingdom authority over all things. He told us that. He said, I give you the keys to the kingdom. But we'll never be over these things that God put over under us until we're willing to get under and stay under those things that God's put over us. And that includes all lawful authority. I hope you understand that. I didn't say all legal authority. I said all lawful authority. And that's the key to this entire lesson I learned in my life, okay? So let's look at that story about King David and King Saul. You know, King David had slain Goliath, and he was a hero, and the women in the street said, Saul slays thousands, yet David slays tens of thousands. And that got him upset. King Saul was upset. So it got to a point where Saul wanted to kill David, even though David was anointed by Samuel to become the next king. So I'm going to share this passage out of 1 Samuel chapter 24, verses 1 through 7 with you. And it came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines that it was told him, saying, Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. And when he came to the sheep by the way, there was a cave, and Saul went to cover his feet. Now that term is the old English way of saying that he had to relieve himself in private. And David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. And the men of David told him, Behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, Behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as thou shalt seem good unto thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said to his men, The Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. Now stay with me here, okay? So David stayed his servants with these words and suffered them not to rise against Saul, but Saul rose out of the cave and went his way. So there was a perfect opportunity there, a perfect opportunity for King David to kill Saul. Yet Saul was the king of Israel, God's appointed and God's anointed, even though he was an unworthy king. And David knew that. So David also knew that God was going to replace Saul with him, but at this point he was a young man, a man after God's own heart. And Saul got wind of all of this, okay? So David's the rising star, and Saul sees the sun setting in his being, so to speak, and he's just being consumed with envy and jealousy towards David. So he makes David public enemy number one, and focuses all of his energies and the energies of the kingdom on trying to destroy David. So King David's literally insane with jealousy at this point, okay? And his mind's repeating the words over and over, we've got to kill David, got to kill David. And folks, when you get obsessed with stuff like that, it's not good. So I know there's a lot of bad things happening right now, but we need to keep our eyes fixed on the Lord. That's the key to this thing. I'm not saying lay down to injustice. I am not, but I'm trying to give you the keys to the kingdom here. How you will be able to exercise kingdom authority, just like David did, and just like many believers do today, and just like I'm starting to learn right now in the midst of all this crisis. So here we have David hiding in a cave. Saul's got 3,000 handpicked men with him hunting for him, and Saul goes into the cave to go to the bathroom. Now it's dark in the cave, and David's and his men's eyes were adjusted to the darkness, so they saw Saul come in. They knew who it was, but Saul couldn't see them. And his men say to him, hey, there's Saul. You can kill him right now. Here's your opportunity. Just act out courageously. One stroke of the sword, and it's all over. Say goodbye to poverty, persecution, despair, and all the hiding we're doing in these caves. And we're going to have riches and honor and power and authority. You'll finally be the king, David, by one stroke of your sword. But David goes over, and all he does is cut the corner off of King Saul's robe with his sword. Folks, how close he was to Saul. He could have killed him. He could have, but he didn't. And then later on, after Saul leaves the cave, David comes out and shouts across the cavern, and he says, Saul, look what I have here. Do you see what I've done? I've cut the corner off your robe. I could have killed you, but he didn't. Now, David did this, okay, to have a victory. Now, it wasn't a victory over Saul, but it was a victory over self. And most Christians today, myself included in a lot of cases, don't have this restraint, okay? We don't have this self-realization concerning what it means to surrender. And you always say, saving faith is putting your hands up in the air and saying, forsaking all, I trust him. Well, that's a self-realization where we understand that we truly have to die to self and not be preoccupied with number one. We have to stop saying that I have to dedicate all my energies and efforts to self. You know, that can get to be almost a religious type of thing, you know, when all you're trying to do is satisfy self. And sadly, I'm going to say it. Everyone in this culture, Christian and non-believer alike, we've become a bunch of selfaholics. Now, the greatest victory you and me are ever going to win as a believer so that we will be able to exercise kingdom authority is to learn this lesson that David had when he had a victory over Saul by actually having a victory over self. The Bible says in Proverbs 16:32 that he is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. So what we need to do now is understand how this was fulfilled in David while he was in that cave by refusing to take vengeance on Saul and killing him. And by refusing to do so, he actually gained a great victory. And I know this may sound contradictory, folks. It isn't. I'm telling you it isn't. Actually, David was practicing what Paul taught in Romans chapter 12, verse 21, when he said, Do not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. So we've got to learn to be under those things that God has put over us before we can be over those things that God has put under us. But why? Well, very frankly, I'm telling you, the problem in the world today is boiled down to one word, and that word is rebellion. Now, when Jesus was speaking about the last days, he said this. He said, because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. And don't we see that? Wasn't that in that song I played from Leonard Cohen, Democracy? Go back and listen to that part, folks. Now, this Greek word for iniquity literally means lawlessness or rebellion. So Jesus said that in the last days, rebellion would abound. Don't we see that all around us? Don't we see it in our homes? Don't we see children rebelling against parents like never before? I even heard somebody say recently, everything in the modern home today
is run by switches, except our kids. You get it? Spare the rod, spoil the child. And today, if you do that, CYS will probably come to your house and take them away from you because you're a child abuser. And that's because you are a corporate person under this and say, that child is my property, and you will not touch it. They are powerless. I am not that man, in all capital letters, on my driver's license. I'm not that woman on my birth certificate in all capital letters. That's a corporate fiction you made up so that you can control me and my property. But the truth is, folks, when we learn these things, when we get, we're going to see that the key to it all is to avoid spiritual rebellion. Yet so many in our churches today are in spiritual rebellion. We see them go around with this arrogance, and they actually pick up these new translations that are politically correct to argue their point. But that's nothing but stinking thinking and lies from the enemy. You know, there are so many new translations published right now that lack any kind of scholarship, and they're all full of vain philosophies and political correctness, and they're all done for profit. Look at the new TNIV, also known as the NIV 2011, and it was later released as the Voice Bible, and you can learn more about that at the Christian Post. I have one link here that I can send you, and they talk about it, and they refer to Jesus Christ as an angel. Folks, he's not an angel. He's the Son of God and God the Son. And this stinking thinking, these sloppy translations are justifying every crazy argument you hear in the churches today for the things that you know in your heart aren't biblical. And that is nothing more than sheer rebellion. And we see that same rebellion in the streets, rebellion against the government. Look at what's going on, folks. Look at what's going on right now. And it's all coming from the source of all rebellion, none other than Lucifer himself. So what we need today to do today is to learn how to be under those things that God's put over us so that we can be over what he's put under us. And what I'd like to do is share three biblical truths with you. And I pray that the Lord buries these truths on your heart so that you can be empowered by the keys to the kingdom. So first of all, you have to recognize this kingdom authority, just like David did. We have to recognize it. In verses 5 and 6 that I read before, when he was cutting off Saul's robe, that's what he did. He understood this principle of kingdom authority. He could have killed Saul, but he didn't. He understood that he needed to remain under Saul's authority, even though Saul wanted to kill him. So, folks, they want you to go out right now and start armed violence. I'm warning you, don't do that, because you'll be playing right into their hands. You know, Saul was still king of Israel, no matter how unworthy a title it may have been. And right now, under this crazy system, the imposter-in-chief Biden is still the anointed or appointed president, rightfully or wrongfully. He is. Now, later on, there was another opportunity for Saul to be killed by David, and this is seen in 1 Samuel chapter 26, verse 9, where one of his men named Abishai found Saul asleep again, and his head was on a pillow, and Abishai said to David, David, listen, I could go over there right now and put my spear through him, and I promise you, it'll be a clean kill. I don't need two strikes. One strike. Clean, humane kill. Let me do the job. And David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? So even there, when another opportunity arose for it to be done through proxy, so it wasn't actually going to be King David's hand, David said, no, don't kill him. So I'm going to ask you this. How does that apply to you and me today, since Saul's not our king? Well, in Romans 13, it opens with this phrase that I opened this message with. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. And by the way, that includes all the people sitting in government positions right now. And what is that higher authority in our government? Well, those are the founding documents. The Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for the United States of America, Those are the higher authorities here. And every soul needs to be subject to those authorities. For there is no power but of God, and the powers that are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, and that's the power of our founding documents, resisteth the ordinances of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. So folks, I'm telling you, right now in the United States of America, the power and the authority isn't these government officials, but rather the Declaration of Independence, like I said, and the Constitution for the United States. And when we rebel against these authorities, okay, that God put over us, we're not rebelling against some man. We're rebelling against God. And that's what we have to remember. So, in reality, these government officials are subject to these documents, too, and they're not. So they're the usurpers right now. They're the ones who are abrogating the law, not you and me. And then Paul goes on to say in Romans 13, for rulers are not a terror to good works. So the rulers in our country aren't those people sitting in those positions, but these funding documents. So those founding documents aren't a terror to you and me, but to the evil. So Paul's saying, don't be afraid of the power and the authority that you're under. And we're under the power and the authority of the Constitution for the United States of America. Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise in the same. So I'm telling you, folks, we need to stay the course. We need to avoid being drawn into a revolution. We need to avoid striking out in the streets with violence. Now, we need to stand, and we need to stand righteously, because Paul says, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is a minister of God, a revenger to execute upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, that is to keep him from doing something to you, but for the conscience' sake. That's to keep your heart right before God. Now, I know what a lot of you may be thinking right now, but wait a minute. I don't know what you're talking about, Bro Ken. Well, maybe you don't realize this, but the kind of government that was in power back when Paul wrote this was corrupt beyond anything we're seeing right now. Nero was in power, okay? He was on the throne. And there was awful things happening then. So, folks, I'm looking at the time now, and I'm out of time, and I still have about, you know, another 10, 15 minutes here I wanted to share with you, and I'm just not going to get through this. So this may go through 3 weeks, but what I'm trying to encourage you to do right now is to understand that you have an incredible authority as a believer in Jesus Christ, but you have to stay the course. And if you don't, bad things will happen. Okay? So what I'm going to encourage you to do right now is to never give in, never give in, never give in. And next week we'll pick it up right here where I let off. But listen to Winston Churchill.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And folks, remember that same power that rose Jesus from the grave, the third person of the Holy Trinity, the Holy Spirit himself. That Holy Spirit lives in you and me, and that Holy Spirit is where our kingdom authority comes from. And what we need to do is remember that we have to stay under God's authority so that we can exercise that kingdom authority. And let's just stop with Jeremy Camp and praise the Lord with that same power.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation, where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgent urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. To show a world that looks like there is no hope, that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace. To stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word. Cry out for change in our world, but many times we are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world, because the enemy has been defeated and the victory is in Jesus.